Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hello, I'm Blair Bathory, and this is the Something Scary podcast. Thank you so much for being here, whether this is your first time or you're one of the brave souls who join us every week. If you're a decent person with a conscience, feeling guilty over something can be all-consuming, like a relentless storm casting a shadow over your every thought and action. It's a constant reminder of the choices you made. You either learn to live with it or somehow make it right. But if you can't, your guilt may haunt you to the end. First, a deadly task. Then, the ghosts are calling. Finally, in our featured story, the famous Telltale Heart by Edgar Allan Poe. Before we get to our stories, I just wanted to ask if you could take a minute to rate and review this podcast. You can pause here and do it right now, or you can do it after you've listened. It's one of the ways you can help Something Scary continue to grow, and it only takes a minute. Thank you so much. We are incredibly grateful for the support of all of our listeners. So, want to hear something scary? Guilt trip to hell. The ends always justify the means until it ends up killing you, like in this story inspired by Landon. Looking from the outside, Drayton was an average man. He worked, paid his bills, and enjoyed the company of his wife and two kids. But in fact, he had one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. He worked undercover for a company that tested nuclear weapons. The company would find secluded areas around the world. Then, Drayton and his partner, Justina, would be sent in to inspect the land, gather samples for testing, and survey the effects of the toxic materials. Drayton always had feelings of guilt for lying to his loved ones and being a part of a team trying to create better ways to destroy things. But he justified it with a solid paycheck that took care of his family, which was his number one priority. The company arranged their trip to a nuclear site in Arizona. It was an abandoned town in a secluded area deep in the desert that they had been pouring toxins into for weeks. Drayton and Justina had slipped into their uniforms and helmets, used to protect them from the deadly amounts of radiation. They patiently waited in the control room for their superior to give them the go-ahead to enter. They exited the base camp and began the 60-mile drive to the bomb landing site. After 2 hours in their cramped tank, they discovered the first signs of the test area, cracks forming in the ground below them, likely from the bomb. Immediately, Justina felt uneasy about the location. There seemed to be more damage than usual, and it gave her a heavy feeling in the pit of her stomach. She pulled out her iPad and began to take notes. Shortly, they arrived at the actual town. They observed the huge crater that had been dug into the ground and cacti that had been split in half around the explosion. Then Justina shouted,
"Did you see that?"
She swore she saw the door on one of the crumpled houses rattle. That was impossible. The place was supposed to be empty, dead. After the nuclear explosion, nothing should be moving. But then Drayton saw it too. He beelined for the door. Justina called after him, trying to stop him. They didn't know why the door was moving, but it wasn't their job to explore or enter buildings. It was just to collect the soil, observe, and leave. But against her better judgment, she followed Drayton inside to be sure he was safe. A sinking feeling came over Drayton as he entered the house, but he continued to explore. As he snapped pictures, he heard a spine-chilling scream. He ran back to the entrance, assuming it had been Justina. Entering the living room, he noticed a nose-curling stench that had made his stomach turn. The windows were shattered, and he made sure not to step on the broken glass on the floor. As he approached another doorway, a body dropped to the floor in front of him. He gasped. He stared at the body that wore the uniform of his coworker, Justina. Drayton pulled out his pocket knife as a shadow swept behind him. He whipped around and saw a creature that looked like it was once human, but not now. The deformities in the face and flesh wounds looked fresh and consistent with extreme radiation. The creature had foam dripping from its mouth and huge golf-sized pimples oozing pus all over her face. Her hair was patchy, but worst of all, her legs had clearly split and altered into what looked like four tentacles. Her massive body was smeared with a mixture of her own blood and Justina's. Why? Why did he enter the house? It wasn't protocol. Justina tried to stop him. He knew he was responsible for Justina's death. He knew he was responsible for the deformities of this woman. Lost in his guilt, he didn't see or didn't care that the creature was clutching onto his arm. She parted her lips, and blood dripped from her gums. She shrieked in unbearable pain, then bit down on his arm, cutting through the material of his protective suit with her razor-sharp teeth. He took his knife and buried it into her chest. She fell to the floor, and he made his escape. Shaken and badly injured, Drayton made it back to the base camp and made his account. What horrified him even more than this experience was the company's reaction. They were not shocked. In fact, it seemed to Drayton that similar encounters had happened before. Relieved from his duty to have his arm amputated, Drayton now sat on a pile of hush money, but it would never be able to quiet his mind of Justina's cries asking him to not enter the house and the agonizing guilt he was left with. Would you be able to work in a dangerous profession that you know ultimately caused harm? How would you justify the dangerous work you do? And what would get you to finally stop?
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
The human eye can only see so much of the world around us. Our senses are dull to things like spirits and dimensions, and that's probably for our own good. Like in this story inspired by Kira. Charlotte had always loved the idea of living alone. The solitude appealed to her. Not having to share the kitchen or talk to someone first thing in the morning made it seem like a dream come true. At the age of 29, she got the opportunity to purchase a house at a surprisingly low price from an elderly realtor with eyes so dark they could be mistaken for black. She thanked him profusely for selling the house to her. He had no idea what it was like trying to find a good house at a reasonable price in the market. "You are truly welcome, but you don't need to thank me. Thank the owners that were dying to get free from the burden they called it." The old man chuckled before handing her the keys and driving off. The house was old and beautiful, perched beside a lake. The spacious and ornate details of the home hinted at a rich history. Curiosity led Charlotte to dig a bit more into its past. The house had once been an orphanage for young girls, aged 9 to 16. Reports of missing items and strange messages in the dust of old furniture haunted the girls. The orphanage met a tragic end when all 12 girls and the caretaker were found dead in the attic. The cause of their deaths remained a mystery, with the only clue being a message in the dust on the mirror. I tried to warn them. Charlotte was furious with herself for not looking into the history sooner. Of course, the house was so cheap, she thought. Who in their right mind would buy it? After she got over her initial anger, she felt a little guilty for living her ideal life while all those little girls died. She chose to be grateful for her life and the affordable house she got to move in. One night, as she prepared for bed, she encountered a tall mirror tucked away in the closet. She hadn't noticed it before. It must have been left behind by the owners. Resigned to deal with it in the morning, Charlotte went to bed. In the middle of the night, a scream echoed, resembling that of a little girl. Racing downstairs, Charlotte found the mirror from her closer now sitting at the bottom of the stairway. Instead of reflecting the dark hallway, it showed two girls playing with a ball. The younger girl warned Charlotte,
"Do not trust the illusion it displays."
Before vanishing, the mirror reverted to its usual reflection of the dark hallway. Determined to rid herself of the mysterious mirror, Charlotte planned to dispose of it in a nearby dumpster. But when she got home, she FaceTimed her mother. Casually recounting her day, her mother's focus shifted abruptly.
"Charlotte, did you say you just took that mirror to the dump?"
she said, looking behind Charlotte. Anxiety gripped her as she explained she had discarded the mirror that morning. However, there it was, standing in her kitchen. Kitchen chairs that were once empty now held three girls, each with empty plates.
"Are you still listening to those illusions in the mirror, Charlotte?"
the youngest girl asked before they all vanished. Quickly getting off the phone with her mother, Charlotte was shaken. She examined the mirror and acknowledged a strange comfort in its company. Despite her desire to be alone, she couldn't shake the feeling that the mirror provided a sense of security. Fearful of being labeled insane, she kept the bizarre occurrences to herself. Weeks later, all the paranormal activities became too much for her. She felt like she was going insane. She decided to move back to San Diego with her roommate. While packing, she lost her phone. Frantically searching, she raced upstairs, where the hallway, even in daylight, felt unnaturally dark. Five locked rooms lined the hallway, each now containing a mirror. Panicking, Charlotte heard conflicting messages from the mirrors. Some urged her to leave, others advising her to stay. Amidst the confusion, a mirror revealed the only way to find answers.
"Ignore the illusions. Go to the attic. Your answers lay lifeless there."
Ignoring the mirrored illusions, Charlotte went to the attic. Doubts plagued her mind. However, she pressed on, eventually finding a corner filled with body bags. The stench nearly knocked her over. Each bag contained the remains of the young girls from the orphanage. In the center, a large mirror faced her. Turning on the light, Charlotte found herself asking the mirror if it was the true one. To her horror, her reflection transformed into a decaying figure.
"They warned you. Now you are trapped. Whether you leave or not, never be your true self, Charlotte,"
the figure warned. Lifeless body bags started moving, and decaying girls approached Charlotte, pleading not to be left behind. Terrified, Charlotte fled, leaving everything behind. She ran outside and stopped dead when she saw the old man who sold her the house. He was just standing there by the lake. He looked at her, then shook his head.
"You haven't gotten any sleep, have you?"
Charlotte was confused and scared. She had no idea what he was talking about. "Take a look at yourself," he said, pointing to the lake. To her astonishment, she looked exhausted, as if she hadn't slept in weeks.
"What happened to me?"
she gasped. He explained that she would soon forget her existence.
She allowed the spirit of the young girl to take her over. It is said that everyone who lived in that house left running out with nothing that belonged to them. But with each guest, a soul is set free. With that, the old man plunged into the lake. At the water's edge, Charlotte's reflection returning to normal. She moved back to San Diego, trying to forget the ordeal. Her life seemed to return to normal, but even months later, she couldn't look into the mirror without thinking about the girls she left behind in the house and the one she set free by leaving. Sometimes she felt a savior complex, and sometimes her guilt gave her nightmares for the other girls who might be trapped forever. Have you ever had the opportunity to communicate with a spirit? What do they want from you? If so, tell us your story by sending us an email at somethingscary@snarled.com. Perhaps one of the most famous tales of guilt is from the master of macabre, Edgar Allan Poe. The following is an adaptation of The Telltale Heart. True, nervous, very, very nervous I had been and am. But why will you say that I am mad? I heard all the things in heaven and on earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Listen, and observe how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first I got the idea. I love the old man. He had never wronged me. I didn't want his gold. I think it was his eye. Yes, that was it. Whenever his vulture eye looked at me, my blood ran cold. And so gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus get rid of the eye forever. Now, this is the point. You think I am mad. Madmen know nothing. But you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I went to work. I was very kind to the old man during the whole week before I killed him. And every night about midnight, I opened his door, oh, so gently. And then I put in a dark lantern all closed so that no light shone out. And then I put in my head. I moved it very, very slowly so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. Ha! Would a madman have been as wise as this? And then when my head was well in the room, I opened the lantern cautiously, just so much that a single thin ray fell on the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight. But the eye was always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work, for it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning, I went into the room and spoke kindly to him, asking how he had slept that night. So you see, he could not suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked on him while he slept. On the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. I could scarcely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even dreaming my secret thoughts. I chuckled at the idea, and perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly as if startled. Now you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was as black as pitch, so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept on pushing it steadily. I had my head in and was about to open the lantern when my thumb slipped on the fastening. And the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept still, and nothing. For a whole hour, I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime, I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed, listening, just as I had done night after night. I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of a mortal terror. The sound that arises from the bottom of the soul when one is terrified. I knew the sound well. I knew that the old man felt and pitied him along, and I smiled secretly. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise. His fears had been ever since growing on him. Although he neither saw nor heard, he felt the presence of my head in the room. When I had waited a long time very patiently without hearing him lie down, I decided to open a little crack in the lantern. So I opened it until a single dim ray shot out from the crack and fell on the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open, and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I could see nothing else of the old man's face, for I had directed the ray precisely on the eye. Have I not told you that I could hear all things in heaven and on earth? I say, now I heard a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well, too. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum inspires the soldier into battle. But even then, I kept still. I hardly breathed. I kept the ray steadily on the eye. Meantime, the beating of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder and louder. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder every moment. I have told you that I was nervous. I certainly was. And now at the dead hour of the night, in the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise of this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet, for some minutes longer, I stood still. But the beating grew louder, louder. I thought the heart must burst, and now a new fear came over me. A neighbor would hear that sound. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once, once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. I then smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. Finally, it stopped. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the body. There was no pulse. He was stone dead. His eye would trouble me no more. If you still think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise steps I took to hide the body. I would hastily, but in silence. I took up 3 planks from the flooring of the room and put the body underneath the floor. I then replaced the board so cleverly that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. When I was ready, it was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart. For what had I now to fear? 3 men entered, who introduced themselves as officers of the police. A neighbor had heard a shriek during the night. Information had been given to the police, and they, the officers, had been sent to search the house. I smiled, for what had I to fear? I welcomed them in. The shriek, I said, was in my own dream. The old man, I mentioned, was away in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I let them search well. Finally, I led them to his room. I showed them his treasures, secure, all there. I felt so confident I brought chairs into the room and asked them here to rest. I myself placed my own seat on the very spot under which lay the body of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was feeling at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But after a while, I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears, but still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct until I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale, but I talked more fluently and with a louder voice. Yet the sound increased, and what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I talked more quickly, but the noise increased. I arose and argued about nothing in a high voice and with violent gestures, but the noise increased. Why would they not leave? I paced the floor up and down as if excited by the discussion, but the noise steadily increased. Oh God, what could I do? I raved, I swore. I swung the chair on which I had been sitting, but the noise rose over everything. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they didn't hear? Almighty God, no. No. They heard. They suspected. They knew. They were making a mockery of my horror. This I thought, and this I think. But anything was better than this agony. I couldn't take those smiles any longer. I felt that I must scream out and die. And now, again, louder, louder, louder. Listen, I shrieked. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here, here. It is the beating of his hideous heart. Do you find that you talk to yourself often? Do you give yourself words of affirmation? Or is it similar to Poe's story, where your thoughts become your own hell? This week's podcast stories were edited by Sarah Lukasiewicz, Janine Pipe, and Stephanie Strange. Narration by Blair Bathory and Stephanie Strange. Audio edited and mixed by Calvin Linderman. Additional audio editing by Fitz Harris. Art and graphics by Irma Richardson. Produced by Anna Villalobos. Executive produced by Gail Gilman. Music by Sapphire Sandalo and Calvin Linderman. If you have a story you'd like to submit, send me an email at somethingscary@snarl.com. Don't forget to watch the video version of Something Scary over at youtube.com/snarled. And if you'd like to support the show and everything we do at Snarled, join our Patreon at patreon.com/snarled. Until next time, my spooky friends, sweet screams.
3 has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well. If you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.